Now back to KNBR's Giants postgame. You're talking baseball with Marty Lurie on The Sports Leader.
All right, great to have you with us. We got a slow start tonight. The game went a little bit longer to about 6:09, so that's why we're sort of trying to catch up with the time now. Ron Wotus with us, Bill Lasky. Well, what was the plane ride like after game two? And we're going to get to game two in a second, but it's 1-1 in games. What was it like flying to Atlanta after that?
Well, it was a tough loss for us, you know. You're at home. You win the first game. Lincecum shuts them down, 1-0. You know, typical giant baseball torture, as Kipe would say. And now we got a big lead in game two, and they come back and beat us in 11 innings. I think Rick Yankiel hit the homer. But the plane ride is, hey, let's go. We're going to Atlanta. We're still in it. We're not down by any means. But, you know, if you go up 2-0, you really feel good about going to the other team's home field. But really, Atlanta accomplished what they wanted. They came in, they got the split, and now we're going over to their house where, you know, it gets a little bit tougher. But we were ready. You know, we were excited to be in it, to have the opportunity. So we weren't down, but we knew we had a tough road ahead of us because, you know, Atlanta, you know, there was a team. You knew you were going to go through Atlanta in 2010 if you were going to win anything. And fortunately for us, they had Chipper Jones and Martin Prado hurt. And, you know, that their team was a little bit banged up in that regard, but they were still an outstanding club.
Hey, Ron, just a quick thing on those first two games when Derek Lowe lost to Lincecum. And the second game, like you said, the Giants took the lead and then it faltered. What did you think of their starting pitching compared to the Giants' starting pitching going into that series?
Yeah, you know what? I can't remember the rest of their starters, Bill. I know that Derek Lowe was outstanding for them, and I'm not remembering the other starters.
Well, Eric Hanson and Hudson.
Right. Yeah, Hudson was the one I was talking about. Yeah. Hudson, yeah. Derek Lowe was the one. He was just masterful all year. He had one of the best years he's had.
Yeah, between him and Hudson, those sinker ballers. But they are similar type pitchers. So I liked our guys. Obviously, when we went to win the World Series, we were a little more dynamic. I thought that, you know, a sinker baller, you put the ball in play. But we had strikeout guys. You know, we had Lincecum doing his thing. And, of course, Kane, when he's on, he's unhittable. Bumgarner was a young strapping stud coming along, and he threw some real good innings for us. So they were tough. I mean, they're just a good baseball team. You know, Marty mentioned Bobby Cox. And, you know, Bobby Cox isn't going to mess the game up. You know, he's going to get everything out of his guys, and the team's going to play hard, and they're going to make the right moves. Bobby's going to be aggressive. You know, he's going to be ready for the moment, just like Boach was, I thought, managing our bullpen through that whole series. And obviously he's, you know, got a reputation now for these World Series and how he handled the bullpen and rightfully so. But Bobby is one of those guys as well.
Well, Burrell hits the home run, puts you up, you're up 4-0 in this one, and they come back and tie it up against Romo in the bullpen. And then, as you say, Yankiel hits the home run off Ramirez to win it. And now it's 1-1 going to Atlanta. But the thing I forget, you know, you forget, well, and I'm so glad you bring up the ability to hear these games on radio or to watch them on YouTube again. Bobby Cox got thrown out of game two. He was arguing. What happened there?
Yeah, you know, I don't remember the moment. I didn't recall it, but that was Bobby, right? Bobby didn't care. I think he led the league how many times in being thrown out of a game. And we must have been winning at the time, and maybe he did it to try to fire up his guys and light a fire. I mean, they just lost one game. They were probably down in the second game by quite a few runs. And do you remember what inning he got thrown out? He probably
yeah, early.
Say, hey,
yeah, it
early.
Was 4-0 in the second inning. He was gone after the second inning.
Yeah, well, that's Bobby. He said, hey, you know, let's get these guys motivated. And those things went a long way. Of course, now you can't get thrown out as a manager. You got to go to replay.
I love it. It says Braves manager Bobby Cox ejected by first base umpire Paul Emmel for throwing his hat. So I bet it was a check swing.
Yep, it probably was. And I've seen Bobby throw his hat many, many times, and he's good at it. So it It got under Paul's, you know, that's a real gutsy move by Paul Hemel to throw him out in a playoff game like that. And I'm sure Bobby didn't expect to get thrown out, but once he did, I'm sure he put on a real nice show.
That was great.
I'm sure there was more than just throwing the hat, maybe a little verbal confirmation there.
Well, Eddie Montague tells a story with Bobby, you know, that candlestick when he had to go down the right field line to get out. And he would get thrown out of the game, and he'd open the doors the wrong way, and it would bounce in his face. And you know, but he said the next day, he said, Eddie always said, if you had a flat tire, Bobby would be there to help you change the tire. That's the kind of guy he was.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. I think all the managers, all the people I've ever been around, had the utmost respect for Bobby. You know, he treated people like men. I mean, look, they were one of the first teams, and Bill, I don't know if you played on a team that did this or not. You know, we spend so much time stretching, getting loose before the game, but Bobby, he had his guys. There was no team stretch. He said, hey, you know, you're professional athletes, you're grown men, you're responsible for your own health. And just show up on time for your batting practice. And everybody that played for Bobby loved him. I think he was such a player's manager because he treated you like men, and he cared about you. And you could see that, the way he always backed you up and things that he did. So I've never heard a bad word about Bobby Cox.
Ronnie, when you start looking at some of the old-time managers, and Bobby Cox was one of the ones that were way back in time, too, in our early eras, I think a lot of those managers proceeded to let the guys do what they wanted to do, come prepared to play. That's why sometimes they never even had batting practice. They just drop them on. We don't need batting practice today. We don't even go after that pitcher, the first pitch he throws. Old-time managers did that a lot with stretching as well as, you know, trying to succeed with a couple guys hurt. And, you know, they put them out there, and those guys always stepped up. You never had guys complaining about injuries. They knew they were stiff. They knew they were sore. But I tell you what, some of the rosters, Ronnie, you and I played, there was a lot of guys that shouldn't even been playing, and they strapped them on and went out there.
Yeah, well, you guys get to game three, and it's Jonathan Sanchez on the hill against Hudson, and you're nursing a 1-0 lead into the bottom of the eighth inning. And then things start to happen in the eighth inning. Gonzalez gets a base hit on a bunt. Conrad makes an out. You know, Bobby had no trouble bunting. You know that, Woe?
He didn't.
He was a traditionalist.
Go ahead, Marty. I was going to say he is. And another thing he was great at was attempting to steal a base. If he had two outs and you know, he wasn't going to wait around for three more hits. He had speed on base. He was going to pick a count, and he'd go. A lot of times, he'd go early, 0-0 count. Everybody knows you're going to run, but he's going to force the issue and be aggressive. Yeah, he played old-school baseball. There's no question about it.
Yeah, he did. He really did. Now, Sanchez pitches another great game, and here we are in the eighth inning, and he's out, and all of a sudden, here comes Romo in. And there's Bobby, of course, makes his switch. He bats Hinsky for Troy Gloss. And what happens?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. This is etched in my memory,
Marty
and Bill.
Hit it out of the
yard. Yeah, he hit it out of the yard. But I remember that move, and that's one move that I wasn't feeling good about. Completely, because I knew they had Hinsky on the bench, and I believe Romo had a hard time with him. He didn't have anything really to get the lefties out at that point. He got much, much better as he kept pitching. I mean, he was tough against righties, and Glaus is obviously a dangerous hitter as well. But when they brought Romo in, we brought him in, and Hinsky came up there, I didn't feel good about that matchup, and he left one run right in the middle. He hit the home run. And another big moment. Now, here we go, right? Because Atlanta, they just came back and beat us at home. And now this was the pivotal game for us. I mean, game three, you know, if we're down 2-1 or you're up 2-1 with another game in Atlanta, at least we're assured to go home. So it was a huge home run. And, you know, but here we come. What? Bottom, top of the ninth, we score two.
Yeah, it's great. Kimbrel is in. Just looking at the play-by-play, Ross pops up to second. Ishikawa bats for Romo. He walks, okay, and this is Kimbrel on the mound. Torres is called out on strikes. Well, so you're down to your last out. And
yeah.
Freddie Sanchez gets a base hit to center. And now the lefty Dunn comes in to replace Kimbrell. Huff singles to right. Ishikawa scores to tie it up. Freddie to second. Moylan now comes in to replace Dunn. Here's Bobby Cox spinning the wheels. And Posey hits the ball to Conrad, and he throws it away. And Sanchez scores, and that's the winning run.
Yeah, well, I watched that inning again, and some people thought that Conrad was betting on the game, and he was betting on the Giants because this poor guy, you know, he was an offensive player. And with Chipper down, that really changed their club because Chipper would play third and Infante would be at second base. And I really thought Infante in Lincecum in game one, Aribe? It doesn't matter. It was a base hit. Our only run that we scored was past Infante at third. I thought he should have dove and knocked the ball down. Posey was on second, excuse me, and he didn't. And he was playing second most of the season. And, you know, but Brooks Conrad, this ball went right between his legs, Marty. I don't think it was a throwing error. And it was a routine line drive right at him.
Yeah.
And that was his third error of the game. And I think, the second or third run that was, you know, let in by him in this series because of his inability to play defense. And quite frankly, I'm surprised he was still in the game at that point in time because he did have such a hard time on defense. And actually, the next game in game four, they benched him finally. They said they had to sit him down.
He had three errors in that game. He had four in the series. He I remember that ball that went right through his legs. He looked up and he never even got his nose down on the ground, as you teach, Ron, and it was just right through his legs. And talk about a guy that wanted to go hide. He was Southwest Airlines all the way.
Very good, Bill. I like that. So here we come now. Now you got a shot to, you know, to get the series under control, and you do it. Now you're up 2-1, and you come to game four, which is on Monday. And Atlanta takes a 1-0 lead. You guys tie it up 1-1. Atlanta takes a 2-1 lead, and here you guys come back again in the seventh inning. Another one of patented rally.
Yeah, it was a great series. Every game was a one-run game, and you know, back and forth and big moments. But probably, you know, I was watching a little bit of this last game, and you could see a young Madison Bumgarner talk to Tom Verducci after the game. If anybody wants to enjoy themselves and watch this interview, because, you know, we don't remember, we remember Bum as the intimidator, right? The way he is now, but he had the short hair. He had just come up very humble, and it was a fun interview for me to watch. And it brought a smile to my face, just seeing Bum so young and contributing in that series.
Well, Cody Ross gets the big hit again, and well, again, it's a two-out rally. Isn't this something? You know, you forget all these things, and these two-out rallies are unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's, you know, you got to get that last out. I mean, it's so evident when you go through these series, and you know, that's where the game's changed so much today, and the way it's played. But you know, the defense. If you look, I said earlier in the show, you know, I thought Atlanta, they really beat themselves. Conrad was a big part of that. You know, there was some sloppy play. And, you know, I mean, obviously we got big hits with two outs. You're always going to win games when you get two out base hits with men in scoring position. But we didn't beat ourselves. And we pitched and we played good overall baseball. And we came out on top.
When going through the,
hey, Ron,
the box.
Ron, a quick question for you, Ron. You know, you sat in a bunker, you know, with Bochy mostly through all these series. Was there any talk about down the road, like what are we going to do in the sixth or seventh inning? Was that planned ahead, or was that more or less spontaneous when the game was going on, knowing who to go to at certain times?
Oh, yeah. No, it's not completely spontaneous. I mean, you have a plan in your mind as a manager going into the game, and you know the guys that you don't want to beat us, and you know which guys you count on in the pen. And when you get in these big must-win games, you spend a lot more time going over what you're going to do if you get behind, you know, how am I going to work the bullpen from there? Now, if it's a clean game and a good game out of your starter, it makes it so much easier. But, you know, the games that are most difficult is when you get down early, and Boach did it through this 2010 playoff run, you know, when Sanchez has struggled or a guy struggled and we're down by a few runs. It didn't happen so much in this series, but it did in Philly. And he made some great moves in Philly to keep that thing patched together. It's talked about, it's thought about, and you have more of a plan in your head.
Boy, yeah. What a tough series, and you guys win it 3-2 in that game, and it's on to Philly, and we've talked a little bit about Philly, Bill, and well, I wanted to ask you about was in the Philly game, the last one with Sanchez on the mound. And Utley and that whole thing, and Affeld, Mark Gardner is in the bullpen telling Affeld, don't move. Stay here. Well, take us through that thing.
Well, Sanchez really struggled. You know, this was one of Boach's best managing jobs with the bullpen here, because Sanchez, you know, he gave up two runs in the first, and he was really struggling with his command. I mean, he was all over the place.
He was, yeah.
You know, you don't want to go to the bullpen, you know, in the first or second inning, but he had to go to the bullpen in the third inning. I guess that's when Sanchez hit Utley in the back, not on purpose. He just didn't have it, and he was out of sorts, and Utley threw the ball back at Sanchez, and now Sanchez took offense to that, and he pops off. So both bullpen's empty, the bench is empty, and, you know, someone said it, that everybody's got to go out the same bullpen gate in Philly, right? There's the Phillies are down below, and the Giants are up above. They're right next to each other. So the guys are fighting to get through the door, you know, like gentlemen to get through the door to go out to fight on the field. It doesn't make much sense, but you're right. Mark Gardner was telling Affeld to stay put because we needed him to go into the game.
That was really an intense moment right there in that game, as you were talking about, because Sanchez struggled. And, you know, when you look at him at Atlanta, the last game San Diego, he was pitching gems of games, and it was just unorthodox for him that day. And he just couldn't get the slider over. His fastball command was all over the place. And as you said, Ron, he was struggling to try to get through two innings. He struggled to get through the first inning, and then he went back out in the second inning, third inning, and, of course, the rhubarb started. And Affeld took it over from there and just led the bullpen right to a win.
Yeah. Now, that's tough for a pitcher, huh, Bill? He pitched so good, and then when you don't have it, you know you don't have it, you know, I would imagine. But it was obvious that he was really scuffling in that ball game.
It was. And, you know, every time it goes off fastball command, we all know that. Marty knows that. Ron, you know that. Mostly all the fans listening knows that it goes off fastball command. If you can get your fastball dial in, outside, inside, everything goes back behind it. But when you're struggling to get that over, then you got to come back with a secondary or a third pitch to try to maneuver ways to get it in. But he struggled. He was winging the slider from the side instead of staying on top. The cement mixer just wasn't even twirling in there. But, you know, it was a great game. That was one of the more exciting games in that whole series.
Yeah. Amazing. Boy, what a run this 2010 was. And the World Series became easier, truthfully. But these two series, they were tough series. My goodness, they were tough.
Yeah, well, two things, you know, stand out. That we were talking about how tough Atlanta was. But, you know, one thing that stood out to me in that Atlanta series at the end, that was Bobby Cox's last game that he managed. I think we alluded to it. And we were out celebrating, and Bobby Cox came out of the dugout to tip his cap to the fans and congratulate us. And everybody stopped midstream to clap for Bobby Cox, because that was his last game. And then the other thing comes to mind is I think Kuiper, he must have coined torture in 2010, because if you look at the ninth inning of the Atlanta series in the game clinching game, he walked two guys in the ninth, and he finally got the last out. It wasn't easy. And then in this Philly game, he came in the eighth, and he had a little bit of trouble, and Polanco hit a line drive right at Aubrey Huff way off the line in the eighth inning. We turned it into a double play, and we had to bring him in the eighth, because I think Lincecum came in out of relief and struggled, so we tried to, you know, get more out of him. And, you know, that ball's to the right or left a few feet. And, you know, we don't win that game. But Brian Wilson, as good as he was, he kept us on the edge of our seat in these series. And that, I think that's what made the game so exciting. They were always close mm-hmm. games, and they were always nail biters.
Well, you mentioned something to me about Atlanta 2002, which came back to you and involved J.T. Snow. That was a good story.
Yeah, Bill, I don't know if you remember this. You know, back in 2002, we had to go through Atlanta as well in the division series. And it was game five. The series was tied two games apiece. And we had a one-run lead in the bottom of the ninth. And Atlanta got one guy on, and Rob Nen was on the mound. And we know, you know, devastating he was, but he's facing Chipper Jones. Now they got a Chipper Jones in the prime of his life. They got a guy on first. We have a one-run lead with one out. And right before the pitch, JT looks in at me, and he wants to know whether we want to play no doubles, play the line, right, mm-hmm. at first base. Nen's throwing that slider in the back foot of Chipper. Mm-hmm. Chipper's a pull hitter anyway. So you don't want a ball to go inside the first base bag, because now one run scores, and that's for sure a double, and they got the go-ahead run. So you want to make them get a couple hits there to tie the game. So just before the pitch, JT looks in at me. I tell him to stay on the line. The next pitch, Chipper hits a rocket right at JT standing on the first base bag. He steps on first. I don't know if the listeners remember this. He throws the ball to Aurelia at shortstop. They have the runner hung up that was on first. He tags him out. The game was over. We're going nuts, and nobody knew what happened. They never saw JT. The fans didn't know JT stepped on first, and there was like a 10-second delay, and we were all over on the field jumping up and down. But that was another a moment in time where winning is so fleeting, just as we talked about some of these other scenarios. And, you know, a lot of things got to go right for you to win ball games like this.
And you know what, Ron, you know, the thing that you just said, you know, you look in, you're talking about, you know, JT Snow at the last second to get what he thinks and what you think on the same eye level, brain thought, gut. And your reaction is a lot with gut reaction. And I'm going to turn those analytics right around the opposite way. Those are the type of things when you don't use analytics. Those are gut-wrenching decisions. And that's what you did as a defensive coordinator so many years with the Giants. So many different players have talked about that. And I do want to say, you got to tip your hat, because you've done so remarkable what the defense the Giants did in these three World Series, as well as all the other years, too.
Well, Bill, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. But you bring up a good point in the age of analytics, because, you know, when you look at statistics, you don't have all the variables in the moment in time in that game. And my point, Rob Nen is throwing sliders on the back foot of a guy. Well, the first baseman, JT, knows, do we want to play the line or not? Because he knows he's going to pull the ball as well. So those are things, as you said, you have to be in the moment, and you have to use mm-hmm. all the variables in place, the hitter, the pitcher, the score, to make these decisions. So I'm glad you mentioned that. That's mm-hmm. a good thought.
Yeah. Well, you're amazing. That's why you're the professor, you know, and we go back. Really, you know, we gloss over it from time to time, how many years you've been doing this. But, you know, it's amazing. I love this, because we talk about building a team and the names, and we look at what's going on now and get this guy, get that guy, get this guy, get that guy. It is not simple to build a championship team. And Uribe, I was thinking about that, the big home run in this the Philly
yeah.
game. He would play dominoes, remember, before the game, and he'd be sitting
yeah.
there. Remember, all the guys would be around him, and he'd be slapping the dominoes down and this and that. And he always smiled. He never had mm-hmm. a bad day. I forget who it was in the White Sox told me that. Said, this guy will never have a bad day. He's always smiling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I get the feeling with Sandoval, you want the same kind of thing from him.
You know, you're exactly right. Uribe loves to play the game, and he makes people around him better. He's one of those clubhouse guys that guys love being around. And Pablo's the same way. Pablo, you know, he may rub a guy wrong here or there because he's loud and all that. But you know what? He loves to play the game. He's a good teammate, and people have fun with these guys. And in your point of building a championship team, it's about the people. And, you know, as I said, Saves and Bobby Evans and everybody, Dick Tidrow and everybody that put this team together, you know, they pulled the right strings with the right people, because it's about the players. And you guys were very kind to me with the things you're saying, but we both know, all of us know, that if the players don't execute, you know, none of this is possible. And so we've had some great moments, because we've had some great we had some great players on the field, and they performed when they needed to perform, and that's why they're world champions.
Boy, great story.
And you know, one other thing, Marty. You know, when you make this team up, when you start looking at all the acquisitions they did, and then you're going into the playoffs with pretty much 5-6 new faces, and you got to gel that locker room. Mm-hmm. I still think Uribe was that hidden guy, because he was always a crankster. He was always joking. He was always laughing. And it does make other players relax when you have players that make that thought in your head, hey, it's a baseball game, instead of thinking, oh, my God, we got to win today. And when you get veteran players, and we talked about Sanchez, great leader, and other players, you know, you talk to Cody Ross and Burrell. Those are the kind of guys that made that team come together when it came into the playoffs. Do you agree, Ron?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we had the right people. These guys were pros. You didn't have to tell them the stretch. They were going to be ready for the moment, and they came together as a group because they were good teammates and they were good players. We had great players, and we had all the right pieces. And when you do that, the players know it, and these guys can sense that we had a chance to win. I think once we got through Atlanta, we knew Philly was going to be tough, but we felt confident we were going to beat them.
Yeah.
Wow, what a story. You know, this is like last week for me. The goosebumps start again. it starts again, and even the last game against Philly, I don't know if you remember, but I was looking at the box score. Sanchez, 2 innings. Affeldt, 2 innings. You know who came in after him? Baumgartner for 2 innings.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
Lopez, then Lincecum, and then he didn't have it. A couple of hits out to get him out of there. And then Wilson, 5 outs to end it. But there's 2 walks in there with him.
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Crazy.
Well, we'll let you go on this Saturday night. It is still Saturday night, right, Bill? I think it is.
Yeah, you know, Ron, Marty and I talked this week. I thought it was Friday and it was Thursday, and Marty thought it was Sunday. So we're kind of mixing up the days, sort of like those long road trips, Ron.
I hear you. Hey, it's easy to do. And hey, thanks for having me on, guys. I thoroughly enjoyed this, you know, looking back at some of these games. And you guys made my day today. I hope the listeners enjoyed it, too. But with some great moments and some great games.
Well,
yeah,
let's talk River.
Pleasure, Ron.
Let's talk River Islands before you leave. Colleen was nice enough to send me some information. And last few weeks, it's home builders, River Island's home builders have responded to the current crisis by providing sales counseling by phone, video conference, and live chat to answer questions about homes and neighborhoods. So River Island's website, riverislands.com, is now a virtual welcome center with all the floor plans, more than 40, more than 100 different exterior elevations as well. Now, the response by its schools is amazing. So rather than have the students log on to homework assignments, River Islands Technology Academy is hosting 5 online classrooms for real-time personal instruction. So students are interacting with their teachers and classmates daily from the safety of their home. So neighbors continue to show community support by chalking, listen to this, Will, by chalking messages on the sidewalks while keeping families at home. I thought that was a misprint. So discover for yourself what makes River Islands so special. Start your tour at riverislands.com. That's riverislands.com. How do you like that?
Yeah, no, I love it. I really think that, I mean, everybody with the kids out of school right now, I mean, a lot of schools are trying to, do the technology and have the classes from home. You know, here's a new community that has this. They actually have a technology academy, as you said. So they're linked up with all the latest technology. So it was real easy for them to, instead of just doing it at the school, to send this to the kids that are at home. And the way I understand it, the virtual classroom, the 95% of the students are on board in doing this. And what a great resource to have in your community. So I think it's outstanding.
I love it. Well, we'll talk to you next Saturday. We'll do more 2012 next Saturday. And that's the one that I'll never forget it. After game 2, Arroyo 9-0 shutout, and remember my dear Alan Beyer, the late Alan Beyer, we love
yeah.
one, right? And
mm-hmm.
Bill
absolutely.
He said to me, well, we're sure. done, we're done, we're done. I said, don't worry. It changes in a second. You just have to win a game and win an inning. And I remember I did the show that night and said it, so we'll talk about that next week. So that'll be fun. That'll be fun. So have a safe, healthy week, Woe, and we'll look forward to catching up with you.
Good talking to you.
All right, guys. Thanks. And same here, Bill. Take care.
All right. That is Ron Wotus. Fabulous stuff. Really good.